Hello, welcome to Kasinatian, Kasayuran, Kasaysayan, Kamatuuran, a podcast dedicated to discussing the latest topics of interest in Philippine politics and society from the perspective of Filipinos in general and Cebuanos in particular. This is your host, Ryan Dave Ryla, educator and voice in the wind. For this evening, our topic would be the online sexual exploitation of children. A bit of context for the listeners. This pertinent topic is quite sensitive, and it might require put a disclaimer here on the sensitivity of this topic, as it might be prove to be a trigger warning, and so we'll just let the audience know beforehand. As well as this topic is important for us right now, especially with current statistics coming from multiple groups saying that there is an increase in the sexual exploitation of children brought about by the pandemic, no, because of the prevalence of the internet as well as the current lockdown in place in the Philippines. Joining us this evening would be Attorney Archil Ninia Faler Capistrano. She is currently a faculty member of UP Cebu, University of Philippines Cebu, and as well as one of the prominent members, or rather one of the heads of the Children's Legal Bureau here in Cebu as well. So please help me welcome Ma'am Archil Ninia Faler Capistrano. Ma'am, mayong gabi'i.
Mayong gabi'i. Good evening to all the listeners of this podcast, Kasinatian, Kasayuran, Kasaysayan, Kamatuuran.
Okay, mayong gabi'i, ma'am. So, ma'am, talking about this pertinent topic, no? I believe we need to first go with our first talking point. So, what is OSEC?
OSEC is known as it's an acronym. This stands for Online Sexual Exploitation of Children. Alternatively, there are sectors that would call the OCSEC, or Online Commercial Sexual Exploitation of Children. In other journalistic work, it is referred to as Online Sexual Abuse of Children. Either way, the common denominator is actually technology-mediated abuse of children. So in this case, it's the use of the internet, a global fluid, in abusing minors or people that are below 18 years old based on our laws in the Philippines.
I see. So there's a set definition of who are considered children, ma'am, no?
Yes.
I see. So I think it's very clear for the audience right now as to what we are referring to as OSEC. Perhaps we can put more context into it, ma'am, by simplifying the term as to, let's say, not just the technicalities of it, but what does it mean in the ordinary language of everyday Filipinos?
Okay, for ordinary Filipinos, OSEC is actually using or exploiting minors usually for the purpose of getting money by exposing children their private parts, presenting children in sexually provocative poses for the purpose of earning something. And this is done with the use of the internet, or of course with a webcam or with a computer. So that's the common thing. That's why I said earlier it's technology mediated. You make use of technology, of a computer. You only need actually a computer with a webcam and an internet connection. And you just need a child, and anybody who wishes to exploit a child can tell the child, you do this, you do a live show, a sexually provocative show, showing private parts to an audience from any part of the world that would like to see such children, okay, in sexually provocative poses. And then from there, with the use of money transfers, these audiences can send the money to whoever is exploiting the minor.
I see. So this involves really the transfer of funds, ma'am, no, or money. Does it cross into, let's say, the territory of money laundering? Would it be going that way, or maybe not? No? Just thinking of the possibilities.
Okay, because in the case of money laundering, you need huge amounts of money. But in this case, these are not necessarily huge amounts of money. This is, would be around, it depends on the quote-unquote price of the child in the show. So usually it would range, it would not necessarily reach hundreds of thousands of pesos or dollars. But it would be enough, say 5,000, 10,000, depending on the audience, depending on the marketability of the show, quote unquote, then you would have such money. But it's not within the ambit of the huge amounts contemplated by the anti-money laundering law.
I see. So this is not money laundering, but this is, let's say, the transactions are quite small.
Yes. The amount is not, I'm not saying it's small in the sense that, if you compare it with the amount pegged for money laundering, it is small. But that's the sad thing about it, because when you say it is small, it is actually commodifying. This capitalizes, this actually puts a highlight on the fact that children are becoming commodities, using technology to commodify children just so that people can earn from this exploitative venture.
I see. So, for example, ma'am, if this is in small scale, does it require, for example, for the perpetrators to have, skills in digital fields, or if it's small scale, is it quite simple for the perpetrators to do this?
Okay. You actually do not require such advanced skills in technology or in computer skills just to be able to perpetrate the crime. I did mention earlier that all you need is a computer unit with a webcam and internet connection. And if you know how to operate the computer, if you know how to go online and use the internet and transact online, then you are ready to go. You can already have a business such as this.
I see. So this is quite dangerous, ma'am. No, it creates it's almost undetectable. It's small scale in operation, but this is prevalent. Can you tell our audience, ma'am, how this has become prevalent in the past decade or so?
Well, if we talk about history, this is actually part of the species of human trafficking or trafficking in persons. And the thing, though, about this is that when you contemplate human trafficking, you actually talk about mobilities of people and the movement of people being exploited for various purposes. In this case, in the context of this type of trafficking, we call this sex trafficking. It's for sexual exploitation. That's the purpose. And this is actually started decades ago, even especially at the time of Marcos, although we could always hearken back to the prevalence of patriarchy and prostitution, the sense of tolerance to prostitution and sexual services when we were under the Americans during American colonization of the Philippines. And then to continue with the RPUS bases here in the Philippines. And of course, when we talk about the Marcos era, when the administration, although officially said that we are not exporting people, we are not doing exportable labor, but there's a difference between what is officially the policy and what is being encouraged by the government at that time. there in my chapter, for instance, in the book that has just been recently published by Routledge, entitled International Studies in the Philippines, Mapping New Frontiers in Theory and Practice. This is edited by Frances Antoinette Cruz and Nasef Manabilang Adyong. My contribution being chapter 13, which is entitled Sexploitative Human Trafficking. It's called sexploitative because this is sexual exploitation. Okay, so it's sexploitative human trafficking in, out of, and beyond the Philippines, a liquid problem in a cosmopolar international system. I discuss there how our government during the time of Marcos has actually encouraged tourism. And in this case, let me be specific about that, sex tourism. This was the thing that started the Japayukis, or the entertainers, female entertainers that would go to Japan. And part of the entertainment is the rendering of sexual services. And from there, sexual exploitation of women and girls have become rather a home-based phenomenon until it becomes, in the current form, with the internet, with technology, it becomes a cottage industry, so to speak.
Mm. So that's very sad to note, ma'am, no, that this has a direct link with prostitution and, of course, the history of the country with colonialism and exploitation of women that came along with it. So that's a that's a very sad note for our history indeed. Last question for this talking point, ma'am. With regards to the direct link between prostitution and OSSEC, can we say that the means have just transferred, but essentially the trade is the same?
Very much, yes. This is a, in my chapter, I would consider the trafficking of persons, or trafficking in persons, to be an inveterate and multiplex evil. It is polymorphous since the slave trade of old until today. It's modern day slavery, and this includes sexual slavery. And the problem is there's always the abuse of power as against the vulnerability of the victim. In this case, the vulnerability of children. So it is the same thing, only that the means to commit the crime has become more and more sophisticated, especially with the mediation of technology.
I see. So it's still the same trade, but with just a different means. In fact, I'm seeing some statistics here, ma'am, from the Child Rights Network of Philippines. It says here that 1 in 5 Filipino children are vulnerable to online sexual abuse and exploitation. 90% can access the internet whenever they need or want to. 50% said the internet is not safe for them. But boys are also found to be as vulnerable as girls. If I may add one more addendum, who are mostly trafficked, ma'am? Is it boys or girls?
Okay. Based on the consistent statistics globally, we have about 70% of the victims being female. So that would include women and girls. There is no clear disaggregation as to who are minors and who are not or are of age. But what is clear is that there is an overwhelming majority of women or female victims of sex trafficking. And sex trafficking is the one that comprises the bulk of the forms of trafficking in persons.
I see. So in OSSEC, yes, ma'am.
Ryan, I would like to ask, what is the year of for the statistics that you got from CRN, the Children's or Child Rights Network?
It only indicated here, ma'am, that the sources are UNICEF Perils and Possibilities, Growing Up Online, and UNICEF Philippines Kids Online Survey. But it does not say from which year. But the post is dated July 23, 7 days before the celebration of the World Traffic Persons Day, I think that's the term.
Okay. Right, yes. Because in the 2017, this one has a year though, the 2017 press release of UNICEF, UNICEF actually identifies the Philippines as a top hub for child pornography, and one out of eight, so that's practically, eight out of 10 rather, or that's 80% of our children being at risk to this kind of abuse online.
Wow. So that's the day is actually called, ma'am, World Day Against Trafficking in Persons, celebrated every July 30th.
Ryan, are you still there?
Yes, ma'am. Sorry, the mic was off. The day that I was referring to earlier was actually the World Day Against Trafficking in Persons,
July 30th.
Every July 30th. Okay. So perhaps we can proceed now, ma'am, with the second talking point, which is, who are the stakeholders in dealing with OSEC? I mean, who are the partners, or who should be partners in curbing this heinous practice of OSEC?
All right. As far as the Children's Legal Bureau is concerned, because we actually go for developmental legal aid. So in this case, in developmental legal aid, we do not look at the victim as a perpetual victim, but somebody who can empower himself or herself. So in this case, obviously the stakeholders cannot just be the victim, himself or herself. There are other actors that must be on board this particular advocacy. And we usually refer to the five pillars of justice plus one. So what are or who are the components of the five pillars of justice? So we usually begin with the law enforcement, so that we have the police, okay, because these are the people who would apprehend the perpetrators. We move forward with the prosecution, so this is the executive branch, and these are the people who would push for charges against the perpetrators that are apprehended by the law enforcement agents. And then we move forward with the courts. So definitely we have to have the justice system on board, because these are the people, the justices, the judges are the ones who would meet the necessary punishment or penalty for those who are proven guilty of the crimes in this particular abuse, the kind of abuse. And then of course we have the corrections or our penal institutions, because we need to be very discreet, and we have to be quite, discerning in doing corrective measures. There are people who are involved who probably deserve a different kind of penalty or treatment. In this case, for instance, you do not consider the victim to be punished or punishable just because he or she got involved in a crime, especially if it's a minor. But how do you deal with families who are the ones perpetrating the crimes upon their children? That's another thing altogether, because it's a sad thing that when a parent or a family member is taking care of the children, who are the ones who is exploiting the children, would go to jail, who then would take care of the children. Of course, there will always be DSWD, but the thing is there enough space in DSWD to have our children taken care of, especially those that are traumatized by this kind of victimization? So that's on the correction side. There is the fifth part, and for us in the NGO community, is the most important component of the five pillars of justice, and this is the community. So the community is where the families are. We need to have them as our strong and active partners, because if this is the missing link, it is so difficult for children who are abused to be protected, because the privacy of the home becomes the very place of exploitation. And where the community is so judgmental, the child may not, or any trafficking victim may be stigmatized continuously and be always in danger of re-trafficking because there is no safe place for him or her to feel at home. And then, of course, I mentioned the sixth, the plus one. The sixth pillar of justice would have to be the local government units or LGUs, because we do recognize the importance of devolution of powers and, of course, decentralization of the important powers so that the local governments are also able to monitor their area, to take care of the people in their own backyard, so to speak.
So those are the pillars, ma'am, no, of justice. Interesting. But you did say, ma'am, no, for the sake of, or rather for those who are listening, you did say that most of the perpetrators are family members themselves?
Yes, that is true. Based on the operations that our legal team in CLB have, and you can actually read this, you can verify this in the news articles.
I see. So this is quite shocking to hear that family members themselves are selling their kin, especially their children, to such vicious industries.
Yes, Ryan, I would like to take off from what you mentioned earlier about the pandemic.
Yes, ma'am.
Because as we know, just I think about weeks ago, we have heard that the Philippines has the unemployment rate in our country has skyrocketed to 45%. Now, I'm not going to make any more obiter dictum about the presidential spokesperson presenting himself in such toxic positivity as to even rejoice that at least we are not 100% unemployed. But the thing is, 45%, a spike of 45% unemployment in the country can mean so many families bereft of income. And if you don't have any income, but you have the gadgets at home and you have children, these are the perfect ingredients for a criminal recipe, for a recipe of abuse to the children. And this is why, I believe it was in BBC or in Reuters, there is this particular news article that the incidences of child abuse online has also tripled. But the thing is, that's the sad thing about this kind of crime, because this is enshrouded in what we call the shadow economy. Not a lot of victims, and most certainly not a lot of perpetrators, are willing to come out in the open and tell the world, hey, we are doing this in the privacy of our home. Because, of course, that will stifle and that will snuff the possibility of earning income. But yes, the pandemic is only making this issue a whole lot worse.
That's really heartbreaking to hear, ma'am, that people are I think they are forced to do this mainly out of necessity, or perhaps are even enticed by the kind of money that they can earn from this heinous industry, no?
Yes.
Sadly. So you did mention, ma'am, that part of the pillars of justice are the LGUs. In the time, for example, of this current administration, if I may insert a bit of politics here, I'd like to ask if the LGUs are as cooperative in curbing this campaign, or is there a certain changes in the stance? Primarily, I'm thinking of the pronouncements that the president has made over the years, suggesting some, let's say, misogynistic behavior on his part. And of course, as president, what he says carries weight. So perhaps we can say that this is reflected as well in the manner in how the LGUs have tackled this problem of OSEC and, of course, of the exploitation of women and children?
Well, the LGUs in Cebu are quite active in partnering with NGOs. For instance, the CLB, or the Children's Legal Bureau, is accredited in the province of Cebu for the protection of children. Although I would say that there is a lot of politics going on and could actually influence how we in the NGO can help out. But in general, the LGUs are doing what they can also to help out. Just a little bit of a footnote, because again, this is the problem with our local government in the Philippines. When you have changes of administration and changes of people on the position, usually programs do not have continuity. And I'm sure you know what I'm talking about because you also teach politics. So the thing is, as far as, this is just an example, this is our own experience, because in the prior administration under the former governor, we actually clinched supposedly an agreement, and we were about to formalize a deed of donation or some legal document. I was not really in the know of the specifics, because I was, due to time schedule clashes, I was unable to join the CLB delegation to meet up with then Governor Hilario Davide III. But the thing is, we had a deal clinched already for the CLB to be able to make use of a parcel of land that belongs to the province of Cebu, where we could build our training center and basically our office, where we could serve our clients, especially the children. But in comes the new governor, and this is not anymore that much of a priority. Okay, in fact, health. In fact, you are familiar with what we're talking about, the pandemic, Ryan. The thing is, there were so many health workers in the province that have been displaced once there was a change in administration.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
This is a reality that we have to grapple with. Hmm. And this is so ironic right now, because once the health workers were out, a lot of people were out of jobs, and we do need people to take care of our health. And then in comes COVID-19.
Yeah.
And then the controversy of the tuob and whatnot. So you will notice this series of, quote-unquote, to borrow Lemony Snicket's term, unfortunate event. These are things that are really such weak links in our local politics.
I see. So, yes, ma'am, no, that indeed did happen, that we were caught unprepared when the COVID-19 pandemic hit. So, I think that sums up for our second talking point. Our third talking point, what are the current efforts to curb OSEC in the province? I think you have preempted on this one, ma'am. But perhaps you can, you care to explain more about other current efforts, especially in this,
Yeah, the current efforts, actually, when we talk about the national level, I think it would be good to have a major point in that for this talking point, the national level. I mentioned in my chapter certain laws that are quite protective of children. You see, we have Republic Act 6955, the Anti-Mail Order Bride Act of 1990. Then we also have the Anti-Rape Law of 1997, which has been expanded, of course. It's RA 8353. Of course, we have the Magna Carta of Women, and RA 9710. And of course, the Anti-Child Pornography Act of 2009, which is RA 9775. And then the newer Anti-Mail Order Spouse Law, which includes now the males, and including online acts. So that would include mail order brides, basically. So this is Republic Act number 10906. And of course, you have the Cybercrime Prevention Act of 2012, which is RA 10175. This is over and above the typical anti-child abuse laws, such as RA 7610, and of course, the Anti-Trafficking Act. We already have the expanded Anti-Trafficking Act, which is basically the new vintage. Okay, so we have the RA 9208, the Anti-Trafficking in Persons Act of 2003, and in 2012, the newer one, which expands this act, RA 10364. So those are based just, you know, the essential laws that would be good points of reference as far as our legislative efforts in curbing this kind of abuse and related abuses. Locally, we did mention already about the local governments cooperating in partnership with local government, with NGOs such as CLB. So we have our accreditation both in the province and also in the city of Cebu. And recently, we in CLB have been working on getting accredited with, because we're expanding in Dumaguete, Negros, and then of course in, where's the other one? Dumaguete and in Iloilo. So we have already our team, something like a satellite personnel there, so that we can look after the needs of the legal needs of the victims and the survivors there of child abuse and related abuses. So that's one other thing. Another thing also is that the NGO community, in particularly CLB, has been working with the important, with IACAT, for example, the Interagency Task, the Council Against Trafficking in Persons. So we work closely with IACAT. And then other than that, we also got some, we had some sort of code of, it's not really a formal code of conduct, but we have an agreement in principle already, and it's already working with restaurateurs and hoteliers in Cebu, so that these resorts will be able to post signages that would alert anybody that in case there is this abuse, there would be minors in the company of exploiters, whether Filipinos or non-Filipinos, there will be a more or less smooth reporting. Speaking of reporting, online as well, we have posted in CLB in our Facebook page, as well as in our website, and together with fellow NGOs such as Bidlisio and Forge, via the Approach Consortium, we have posted hotlines, especially for OPEC. Okay, so those are the current efforts.
I see.
Among others.
So those are very comprehensive in scope, ma'am. No, and it's quite interesting to note that your organization is well embedded into this vast network of stakeholders and organizations that are trying to curb this illicit trade or online sexual exploitation of children.
Yes.
On that, ma'am, I'd like to ask, for example, I'd like to ask about Children's Legal Bureau as part of our final talking point. Can you expound on the scope of the operations of Children's Legal Bureau and of its vision and mission, ma'am?
Okay, we just had our strategic planning in 2019, July 2019, and although I am not looking at the documents of Children's Legal Bureau right now, but we know by heart that our major tagline in CLB is a just world for children. That more or less sums it up, that we see a world that is just for each and every child. And until and unless that world comes into fruition, CLB will continue to exist. Now, we do have four core programs in CLB. So we have Laban Bata, which is it's a double entrant that would show to you that we are advocating for the empowerment of children, and more or less, it is a provocation for children to fight for their rights. Laban Bata. The other one is the CRP, or Child Rights Protection Unit. So we coordinate with barangays. We have our barangay watch groups okay? And we have our, yes, these units that would really make sure that in the community level, children are protected. So even if, for example, our projects with our funders would end, we make sure that these mechanisms and these institutions units would continue to operate. They can continue to consult with us, in fact, okay? And then another would be our juvenile justice program. So this is for our CICL, or children in conflict with the law, because children can oftentimes be used by adults in the perpetration of crimes, not just be the victims themselves, but are made to be the font of the commission of crimes, or in criminal law, you call them, they are made into principals by direct participation, while adults are the principals by inducement. Now, in this regard, we at CLB have been very vocal against the move to lower the minimum age of criminal responsibility from 15 to as low as 9 years old, although the more current one would be around 12 years old. So that one. And then, of course, the support services. So we do have our network. So we don't do it all. We work with fellow NGOs who are looking after the welfare of children. So if, for example, a victim needs shelter, we speak with networks, such as Bidlisio, for instance. So that's why we have the Approach Consortium. We work together in curbing these atrocities committed against children.
Okay. Ma'am, do you have, do you have a word for our audience here tonight who might be interested to partner with you? Do you have, what will you say to them if you are to reach out for future partners? And of course, for those interested to do, volunteer work perhaps for your organization.
Okay. We basically have a website, and you can reach us there at, let me just check here, because we do have, our website, the problem with this, also with the sad thing, we have been changing websites, I think, twice already, and so I did not memorize right now, but I can look for that, definitely. Anyway, we have a website. We also have the Approach Consortium. You can look at Children's Legal Bureau in Facebook. We have a Facebook page, and I'm sure that the other details are there. That includes our email, which is clbfils@gmail.com. And then you can definitely volunteer with us. We encourage people to volunteer. There are some protocols to follow, of course. We will need some paperwork, like we need to know who you are, of course, your resume or your CV, and then the people in CLB will help you, especially admin, okay? CLB admin will walk you through the step. Just the same, you can email, and then, of course, reach us at Facebook, either Children's Legal Bureau, or the Approach Consortium, because it's not just CLB. It includes Forge and Bidlisio. So it's a tight-knit community of NGOs that really work hard so that children will be safer whatever time in the world there may be, especially this time of the pandemic.
Okay. Thank you for that very wonderful series of information, ma'am, and for having this conversation with us tonight. Perhaps as last on our agenda, perhaps you can give everyone that is listening a final word, no final words for reflection in this podcast.
Okay, sure. I would like to thank you, Ryan, for giving me this space and this time and the airtime, of course, in your podcast to speak to your audience about the dangers and the tragedies that have befallen Filipino children because of OSEC, or online sexual exploitation of children. I have often talked about this in interviews that it's not really just poverty that causes children to be placed in this very sad situation, but because of the way consumerism has become diffuse and widespread and has invaded even our very homes and our very own values. We have become rabid consumers of technology, and I call this gadgetized consumerism, when people become enslaved by what they sense as the need to consume technology and other commodities. They in turn become marketers of themselves to the point of commodifying themselves just so that they will be able to earn something. This is especially true in this time of a pandemic, when so many people have become jobless. This joblessness and the ubiquity, the commonplaceness of the internet and technology are great incentives to commit abuses on children. But I hope that we are not entirely deprived of values just so that we take care of our children, because a single trauma that we can cause children can mar them for life. I will always go back to the statement that it is better to build strong children than to repair defective adults. I hope that we will make sure that we will not do things to repair defective adults, but instead do all that we can to build strong children for the Philippines. Thank you very much for this time.
Okay, thank you for that, ma'am. Very inspiring words. No? Thank you for your participation tonight, Attorney Archil Capistrano. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Ryan.
Okay. And thank you as well for listening to the podcast. You can reach the Kasinatian Podcast through our Facebook page at facebook.com/kasinatianpodcast. We are available on 7 different platforms, primarily on Spotify, Anchor, and Google Podcasts. This is Ryan Dave Raila, your host, and we're now signing off for this session. So we'll catch you on the next one. Thank you.